Hello everyone and welcome to Raw Talks podcast with me, Sarah, together with Simba and Mark from Living with the Spirit. And we are here to offer you raw and real conversations about physical, emotional and spiritual transformation. We are specialized in regulating the nervous system, somatic work, energetics, shadow work and deep and unique body work. Our purpose here today is to share our journey and our teachings with conscious leaders just like you and to unlock anything that is holding you back from living a life of freedom and purpose. We are truly grateful and honored to have you with us, and let's explore.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Raw Talks podcast. My name is Simba Stenqvist, and today I have Alex Green, fellow TRE certification trainer, TRE veteran, and just an expert overall in the fields of somatic healing and, could you say, fellow enthusiasm in the world of somatics? Because I would say that's... Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a shared enthusiasm. No question about it.
Yeah. Welcome, welcome. Why don't you share a little bit who are you and kind of what are you doing? What are you bringing?
Awesome. Let's see. Well, I am based in Colorado in the United States, Boulder, Colorado, and just moved here a couple of years ago from the central part of the US. But I kind of like being in Boulder because I kind of consider there might be other sort of capital cities of somatic practices around the world. But at least in the United States, Boulder is kind of, it's not a big city, but it's kind of a headquarters. Somatic Experiencing is headquartered here. The Rolf Institute is based here in Boulder. If there's anything somatic happening in the United States, it might have started in Boulder, or at the very least, it's coming through Boulder first or second. So I feel lucky to be in one of the somatic hubs of the world. But anyway, so I live here in Boulder, Colorado, and I do a few different kinds of work. You know, I run a company called Redbeard Somatic Therapy. And people always ask about that name because I don't have a red beard, but we can talk about that.
I was just thinking about that.
Yeah. Well, we can go into that if we need to. But I have a company, and it's me and several other practitioners, and we're spread out a little bit. A few of us are here in Colorado. A few of us are in Wisconsin, where I used to live. And then lots of us in the world of virtual online work now. Some of us are working exclusively remotely. So it's a team of practitioners focusing on nervous system based work and somatic practices in general. That's kind of the theme of my particular company. But for me personally, I can see my work, like you, you know, because I had you on the podcast and I got to hear about your winding journey into somatics. And there was a lot of resonance because for me, my original foundational therapeutic work was as a structural integration bodywork therapist. And that was really my entry point into the world of somatics. And then after I spent some time in that, I started to get curious about other phenomena that I was seeing in the body, about the nervous system. How does trauma relate to what's happening in the structure and the myofascia and the tissues? And so I'm the kind of person that I can never seem to be totally satisfied with what I know. And so I'm always trying to kind of learn the next thing. So anyway, so at this stage, I still do the hands-on bodywork therapy, but I also work a lot with neurogenic tremoring, with TRE, as well as somatic experiencing, another nervous system-based approach, and some related things like internal family systems. A model is a newer piece of the work that I do. There's probably a few other things, but basically nervous system based somatic work. About half of my work is here in my office in Boulder with people, you know, in my room, and about half of my work is on Zoom, connecting with people somewhere else. And then another half, maybe I have three halves to my work, is my TRE teaching, like you know, running certification trainings and supporting other groups that are bringing TRE into other parts of the new areas in the world and providing supervision. So No, I just, after, I don't know, closing on 20 years in the field of somatics, I don't seem to have been getting bored yet. For better or for worse, there's a kind of a gathering of steam. I feel as excited about this work today as I did when I first began. So that's a little bit about me.
Oh, that's wonderful. And yeah. I can understand what you're saying with the interest that, I mean, this work itself, it teaches you, right? Many times when you start practicing something or working with something, there's studies, there's ideas, there's theories. Of course, there's theories here too, but the deeper, in my experience anyway, the deeper I get into this work, the more it starts to teach me. And it comes from another source beyond the intellect, beyond the thinking mind. And I mean, you've been going for quite some time now. When I started with more nervous system-based approaches like 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
people were like, what do you mean? Nervous system? Regulation? They were like, you're thinking too much. And now it's everywhere. Everyone's like polyvagal, right, and self-regulation, right, and grounding. And it's really mainstream. So I can understand how the interest is just growing more and more, because more and more people are realizing, wow, especially since, you know, the last couple of years and, you know, the whole world stopping for a little bit. Yep. I think people became a lot more aware of, I need to kind of look inwards. I can't just look at what everyone else is doing. It's time for me to take care of my own health. Okay.
Yeah.
How do I do? How do I start?
Totally. No, I resonate completely. When I first got on the nervous system lens, that was around also about 10 years ago, maybe 2013, somewhere when I first did TRE training. And I can tell that story, possibly kind of how I found TRE. But once my eyes were opened to, I call it the sort of the neurobiological revolution of the 20th century or the 21st century, which to me, maybe, I mean, it was the seeds of this were happening, you know, in the 80s and the 90s and earlier, of course, you know, bioenergetics, and, you know, we could go way back in time. But I think that the nervous system framework that Stephen Porges with polyvagal theory, but also Peter Levine and some of the other who were using autonomic nervous system language to explain the effectiveness of somatic modalities of all kinds, from yoga to psychotherapy to whatever it was. I think that was a big turning point, because now suddenly we had a little bit of a, now I can get as Eastern and I can get woo-woo as much as anybody else. And
feel free.
But I think something really empowering about the neurobiological lens is that we have good grounded in biological and neuroscientific science that has started to explain ideas and principles that were previously effective, but the people who care about understanding it from a scientific perspective were sometimes struggling a little bit. So I think that nervous system awareness and how much it's spread in the last 10 years, and now, you know, everybody's talking about grounding and interoception, and, you know, people know about these things. I think it's because I think people are very curious to know, how do we work? You know, I think humans at all stages of civilization have wanted to explain, have asked the question of, you know, what is being a human? What is living a good life? What makes me tick physically, emotionally, spiritually? We always ask those questions. But at this moment in time, we have a sort of a new paradigm that at least gives a different lens that I think kind of meets this time period in an effective way. And I always tell people, like, you know, it's a little, when I introduce learning about the nervous system, and I love all the videos I've seen of you where you just whip out your polyvagal curve chart, and because I know you do a lot of nervous system education, and I do the same thing. And I always say, you know, for me, when I learned about polyvagal theory specifically, it was a little bit like, It'd be like if I had a microwave and I kind of knew how to use the microwave. I knew how to heat up my food, but it didn't always work. And sometimes I didn't know why. And then somebody gives me a manual and they say, well, okay, here's the thing. This is how you set the temperature. This is how you say how long it is. This is what you do if you have, you know, a frozen meal or whatever. And then now suddenly you now know how to use your microwave because you have a set of instructions. Well, for me personally, learning polyvagal theory was like that. It was like I suddenly understood, I could explain, I could understand what was happening when I was at different sort of physical energetic states, when I was in a more accelerated heart rate mode or more, or my thinking was moving more quickly, or when I was feeling more relaxed, or when I didn't have the energy to do something, I suddenly, or when certain sensations would change in my body. It was like I had this beautiful way of now conceptualizing the underlying physiological processes. And for me, that became like a superpower, like I to know what my state is at a given moment in time is massively empowering. So I think the reason we're seeing all the success of somatics is because it works and people are really craving that. You know, what makes me tick? Why do I get so stressed? And what can influence that? So I love this period that we're in.
I agree. And I think there's a few factors, like when you were talking, there was a few things that popped up. It's practical. I think that's one of the things, very practical. And it's very relatable. You create a language that's very rooted and grounded. And whether you're esoteric or hardcore science based or whatever your ideology or your framework comes from, the language has keys, like keywords, that helps you open up, because it all ties down to rooted, grounded practices that you can actually feel and you can relate to them. So even though you might say that sounds woo-woo, but I understand what you're talking about because I can actually relate my experience to it, and someone can explain it to me in a tangible way that makes me feel like I, you know, understand it from my point of view or my perception or kind of where I'm at on my journey. And I also think the main thing, like a tool like TRE, for instance, is that it really, for me at least, it serves as a bridge for people, because it works the same for everyone, regardless if you're a doctor or you're this religion, this ethnicity, whatever. It works the same for everyone. It doesn't discriminate. Right. And then people start to realize, wow, we're actually connected in somehow, and we can palpably feel it when we do these practices. So I think really that's, for me, what I've seen, that's the key. It's very, very grounded, rooted. And the language is like little keys that just unlocks different parts of your awareness and you could say consciousness, that just allows you to go, wow, it's hard not to be interested and curious and want to know more about it, because the better you get at it, the better you feel, the better your life literally becomes. So I think that's one of the crucial factors for why it's spreading so much today.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great.
Well, that's a really big topic. So how did you really get into all of this? Like how does one start with kind of somatic healing? I mean, does it start from an idea when you were a kid and like, I'm going to be a therapist? Or how do you get into this field?
Yeah, no, not at all. That wasn't my idea as a kid. I'm trying to think where to begin with that one. For me, I was always really interested in the field I thought I would go into as a kid and as a young adult going into college was physics. I was very interested in physics. I liked math, but I especially liked science, and I loved the explanatory nature of science. But and I thought physics was very cool, and cosmology and astrophysics and all these kinds of things. So this is what I thought I would. So when I entered school, this is what I was focused on. But maybe I won't go into all the details, but I feel like I had sort of like a my own version of kind of an existential crisis in you know, maybe around age 19 or 20. And my particular crisis was that I realized that I had a pretty fixed worldview, and that as interested as I was in science, I was committed to it at the exclusion of other ways of understanding the world or of understanding myself. And I had a few experiences relating to others and that really challenged that scientific paradigm for me. And I came to the conclusion, and part of, I took some philosophy classes that kind of challenged my views, whatever. So I was kind of, things were knocking on the door of my intellectualized paradigm. And I came to the conclusion that that I was missing out on a lot of perspectives, and that by dismissing things as mysticism and dismissing things as old fashioned thinking about things like religion and spirituality, I had been very closed. And I came to the conclusion that I was missing out on huge swaths of human experience by having that worldview. And I felt very impoverished in a sense. I felt that I was therefore missing ways of being and things. So that kind of began a period of just wanting to see what else was out there. And the thing that was one of the practices or traditions that was most accessible to me was through the Zen Buddhism. And the reason is because my father had been involved, is involved. My dad runs a Zen Buddhist center based in Wisconsin. It's been a big part of his own life and professional journey. As a kid, I didn't know anything about it. I knew he went up to the temple and this is based in Honolulu, Hawaii. And I didn't, there was chanting, and then sometimes people practiced martial arts. And I just thought it was sort of all ritual stuff that had no meaning. But when I entered this period of questioning, I asked my dad, I said, "Hey, what's all this Buddhist stuff about? You know, does this answer any of these, you know, what does it have to say about, you know, all these things?" And he said, "Well, there's no way I would know in advance if this is going to speak to you. I don't know if this is a good practice for you or not, but my recommendation is whatever you decide to do, try to really, you know, you're young, try to sort of dive in and give something like at least like 3 months or so, if you can, if you got the time, because it's the only way to know if there's really something there for it." And so I took one of my summer breaks between college, and I said, okay, well, and because this community was, you know, I knew about it. So I said, all right, I'm gonna spend this summer learning how to meditate and do seated meditation and martial arts, and I'll see if this speaks to me or not. And so that's what I did, and I feel lucky in the sense that it spoke to me tremendously. And what spoke to me so much about it was embodied practice, and I didn't know that I had been missing embodied, that even though I'd been a bit an athlete, like a runner and stuff like that, I had no awareness of breath and body. And the particular Zen lineage that I became a practitioner in, the whole mantra was actually like the sort of the slogan, in a sense, is entering Zen through the body. And so it was a very, very physical approach to meditation, both the seated meditation. We did a lot of physical work. You know, again, I was young, so we were moving rocks and digging out trees and all kinds of manual labor, stuff I had really not done in my life up until that point. And martial arts, you know, for me, it was swordsmanship training that I carried on for a number of years. And all of these things were brand new, some of them extremely challenging. I found meditation so painful, so boring, falling asleep, you know, all the things that happen for beginning meditators, all happened to me. But there was something about, but I could sort of sense that there was something about the physical nature of these practices that had a lot to teach me. And so my whole thing about, I know there's something I need to learn. My hunch was it was through the body that I was gonna open up and learn more. So that began like a period of just, you know, pretty significant practice. I finished my college education, but then I spent a few years full time doing as a resident at the temple. So I was lucky to be at an age when I could take that kind of time. And it was out of that sort of immersive experience of time where then at a certain point I became curious about, well, you know, how do I want to be in the world? How do I want to work in the world? And I wanted to include the body because it had been so meaningful for my own learning, study, and ongoing transformation. I wanted to do that. And so there was a particular bodywork lineage that was rooted somebody who had trained within the Rolfing tradition. Ida studied with Ida Rolf and studied with Moshe Feldenkrais. Some of these had moved to retired to Hawaii and was part of the community that I was a part of in Honolulu. And he ended up kind of synthesizing some of his work with body work and the principles of breath and meditation from Zen, and he created a style of work called Zen body therapy. And this was right near the end of his life, but there was a vibrant learning community around learning his methods. And so at a certain point, I decided I wanted to sort of learn those methods. And so I just took a dive there and found that this way of working with my hands, working with the body, and incorporating principles. And what I liked about it wasn't just physical, although certainly there was a physical component, but attention to breath and attention to mind, body, spirit was very much baked into the methodology. And so I thought, this is the coolest thing ever. I feel so lucky to be able to work with people in this way. And so that was my entry point into the therapeutic work.
That's amazing. And it kind of sounds, I mean, I have a martial arts background too. And we talked about it when I was in the podcast, Right. Kind of like where the, like a lineage. Yeah. Like a lineage.
Right.
And I think for me, when it comes to lineages, there's always two things. One is to respect the tradition. Respect the tradition for me really means values, the core values. Why is it built? And, you know, to be of service, to be a good person, to be a role model. Mm-hmm. But I when I look at lineage too, I think sometimes we confuse it with, we need to keep it the way it was. To keep right. A tradition is to hold on to things the way it is. And right. I mention this because when I look at all of these practices that are ancient and been around for a long time, and you look at the modern TikTok, Instagram, you know, person that obviously is living in a very high state of activation and might not even be aware of it because this might have been going on for generations. What would you say, how are you bringing this to that generation that obviously, you know, 10 seconds might, you might lose someone in 10 seconds if you try to explain it. Like what that might not be a target audience, but like what, like,
if yeah, you, yeah. How are we going to do that?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I really resonate with that comment around, you know, respecting tradition and lineage and then also the evolution or the willingness to sort of try new ways of communicating. Holding both of those has been, I'd say, a big theme for me, you know, pay attention to both sides. I'm not totally sure about, you know, keeping the 10 second TikTok attention span, but what I would say is this is, I think a change for myself has been for a big period of time, I don't think I was ever sort of rigid and dogmatic about, you know, just, hanging on to the tradition exactly. But for me, it felt more like, look, I want to really sort of stay in the practice as it's being taught to me for a long time. And so that was true for certainly my Zen practice, in the martial arts practice, but even in my therapeutic work. You know, I learned a system of working with the body. And then even as I started to branch out, learned TRE, learned somatic experiencing, part of my ethos for a long time was, I am interested in how these things are all talking to each other. However, I also want to be clear about not doing a mishmash of things. I want to know that when I'm doing Zen body therapy, I'm only going to start to be creative when I've, you know, spent a decade sort of not being creative. Exactly. So I think that when I think about, you know, how do we meet the modern world? How do we transmit some of what people like you and me and others, you know, things that we've learned, how do we make it relevant? Well, I think then at a certain point, it becomes important to figure out, okay, well, how am I, what's important to communicate, and how am I going to, and that can be through your teaching seminars, it can be through interviews. I mean, I started my podcast 18 months ago, the one you were on, because I wanted to I thought that conversation was actually a way to communicate. And you know, that's not really a 10-second soundbite, but anybody who might listen to a 60-minute conversation can learn something about the thinking and the things that people have explored. So I think, so it's things like that. But more than that, what I think about in my own teaching work these days, and mostly my teaching is in TRE, although, you know, I'm a practitioner for all these other things, but my main education is around that in terms of educating others. But even there, I find myself now really wanting to begin to think more outside of the box in terms of, all right, we have a system of teaching and learning about neurogenic tremoring, but I made the comment to you before we started recording, this idea of, instead of sort of waiting for the world to come to TRE, maybe some of us, like you and me and others who are already doing this, maybe we need to start to kind of be willing to go out there and capture people's attention and let them know what we know. We know about the physiological process of neurogenic tremoring, which is pretty interesting, and it shows up in lots of domains. It doesn't only show up when we do a TRE session. So I think one of the edges I'm playing with right now as a somatic educator is can we, in a way, let go of some of the previous formats of teaching? The real challenge I'm giving to myself is how do I transmit some information to somebody in a particular sphere? If I'm talking to a psychotherapist, how do I describe how this work might be interesting and meaningful for them? If I'm speaking to a chiropractor, can I get them interested in some of the underlying nervous system mechanisms that we know a lot about? So that's kind of my current challenge. And even the layperson, you know, why would you want to know about your nervous system? Kind of like we were talking about a few minutes ago. Why would you be curious about it? Well, I think just telling others what's been meaningful for ourselves is one way of starting to kind of communicate those ideas. So anyway, that's kind of my own feeling. As I'm feeling, you know, at this stage of my career, I am feeling the interest to be more creative, not for the sake of, not because I need to create something new. It has nothing to do with that. It's about the desire to be able to communicate more flexibly with more people.
I think that's great. And I think, you know, like touching on the lineage and the tradition,
yeah,
was the original question. I really agree, because if I look at an art form, like whatever, like I'm the same, I want to master it before I start to, like, I don't just want to learn the basics and now I make my own mishmash and no one knows what it is. I don't even know what it is. And then like, well, right, what am I actually following? Where am I going with this? I think a lot of these practices, whether it's martial arts or healing arts, they're designed to suit someone at that time and space in life where they're at, where society's at, where belief systems is at. And I think part of lineage is that you take your responsibility and actually adapt it to what is necessary for the time right now without losing the values and without losing kind of the essence of it. Yeah. And a way to do that is, I mean, I remember I started with martial arts many years ago. And at some point, the traditional martial arts, there was less people coming to them because of the mixed martial arts and all the sports coming in. So a concept that we really started was, if they're not coming to us, how do we come to them? Like, how do we go to parks? How do we go to events? And how do we make it more accessible for families, for kids? And so that's really something that I started to explore. How do we work with this beyond, especially when you're doing martial arts, you're like, oh, I want the elite fighters and I want the dojo and the greatest. And you wind up figuring out that that's maybe 5% of your clientele. The rest of them is like, I want to grow a little bit of strength and body, or I used to work out, or, you know, families and kids. So you realize that a big part of the work is actually, for me at least, it's been my experience giving back to people. And that's really how I look at these modalities too. How can I create them in a way so I don't become stressed like someone that's, you know, like I was mentioning TikTok, but how do I meet them halfway without losing my integrity, without losing my core values, but I still create this bridge for them to have something to, a way, create an opening for them to reach wherever I'm at. No hierarchy in it, just different stages on your journey.
Sure. Yeah, totally. Well said. Well said.
Yeah. And I think really what you said, you know, the innovative, like that's really my passion, the innovative practices that you learn something good. I always tell that to all my students, whether it's theory or whatever it is. I said, don't start mixing it with things. Take a good year at least after the training, or two maybe even, and really focus, do a lot of session, become good at it, find your niche. And then if you want to start adding things in and play with it,
right,
now you know what you're dealing with 100%. Because if you start to mix too early, it's hard for you to figure out.
You get confused and totally agree. Yeah.
So how would you say, I mean, you've done so many different modalities, like how are you innovating things today? How does the innovative process look like for you, both for yourself, I'm thinking personally, but also professionally? And how do you bring something out? Because I've seen some of the things you do and it feels quite unique actually to the market. Like what you do feels a little bit different than I see in a lot of other fields.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that question. I think so much of it is around, let me gather my thoughts for a moment here. So I'll give an example. So I'm going to start on the personal side. I think the way that I have tended to work as I've been in this field is that I'll be in a primary modality for a while. So at first it was structural integration, you know, the Zen body therapy format. And then I'll start asking a question that's a little bit outside of the box of what I've learned so far. So using the example of Zen body therapy, as I spent time, you know, session after session, day, you know, year after year for, you know, that was probably at least 5 years of just doing that. But the question that I started to enter in my mind is, okay, there's so much going on in this treatment room. There's lots of things that are happening because of touch, for sure. Because, you know, I'm engaging in the myofascia and then tissue is releasing. Sometimes emotion is expressing. Why is that? What memories sometimes? Why is that? But not only that. There's what's happening because of touch is making a difference, but it's not only that. How I am in my own, if I'm centered in my own awareness, that changes things. Why is that? If I'm staying connected to my own breath, then something changes in the therapeutic relationship. Why is that? So for me, I started to kind of accumulate some questions that I didn't know exact, that I knew were happening, but I wanted additional ways of understanding or working with. And so an example would be, actually the best example is with tremoring, with neurogenic tremoring. So when I'd be doing my physical body work, I would sometimes see, not frequently, somebody be laying there, they'd start to relax, they would take a deep breath, and then, you know, their leg would, you know, kind of start to do this. And I thought, well, geez, that's pretty curious. And sometimes when I was a client, that would happen to me too. And sometimes it wasn't so subtle. I had some experiences that I actually had big vibrational releases before I knew anything about TRE. And so now a question is starting to emerge. I know I'm good at the work that I'm doing. I can look at things structurally. I can think myofascially. I'm getting better at, I'm becoming curious about the therapeutic relationship itself and holding a strong container and center. But what's this physiological phenomenon? Okay, well, so then as soon as through a chance experience, I found out that there was this modality called TRE that was all about that. Well, now suddenly my mind says, okay, well, I need to understand, I'm already seeing that. Now, what is there to learn? So then that becomes, for me, the next phase of study. So I'm going to do it. But now I'm doing that, and then that opens up new questions. So questions around, well, the next big set of questions for me was around, what does the field of trauma therapy, what have we learned about, why do we hold tension patterns the way we do? Why are some of us in a more hyper-aroused, anxious state? Why are some of us in a disconnected from our body, dissociated state? I know that that's true through the work that I do, but I don't exactly know why. So then the question becomes, what has the field of somatic psychotherapy or polyvagal theory, what has that? So that's been a little bit how my thinking has expanded over the years. So that's always how I choose to learn a new modality. I only do it if I'm asking enough questions and I think that that modality has centered on it a little bit more. So the way I'd kind of describe my own professional journey is a little bit of like kind of really connecting to something and then wanting to grow my knowledge base a bit more when I need it, and then growing a next stage when I need it. But the one that's current for me, the thing I've been playing with in the last few years, is as I did a lot of tremoring, and for me, I'm just talk about my own journey in my body for a little bit here. I've gotten tremendous benefits from having done a lot, you know, for me getting a lot of hands-on body work, especially, you know, structural integration style, but lots of other work, visceral work, abdominal work, you know, I've learned so much that way. Well, then I learned a lot by learning how to do tremoring, right? Because now instead of, this is now something that's arising from within me, I can start to tap into something that's more organic and not planned. So then that was a very big phase of learning about my own body and physiology. But then I became pretty curious about, so I think that tremoring is what's so good about it, is it's all about the involuntary movement system. Well, then a few years ago, I became curious about the voluntary movement systems. And of course, you know, there's lots of ways to be you know, martial arts, you have kata, there's forms, those are voluntary movements. Yoga, there's asana, those are forms, those are voluntary movements. But the modality that I became interested in was Feldenkrais work. And lots of people don't know who that is, but basically it's a method of, of body work but it's not hands-on work usually. It's mostly learning movement, but by breaking things down very slowly, learning lots of patterns of movement, not sort of so it's a way of learning how to move the body, not how I learned in martial arts, which was usually fast and things. It was about really slowing things down and experiencing things at a level of detail. But then what I learned as I did that was that when I became more detail-oriented about subtle movement and what was possible in my body, it actually started to completely change my tremoring. So now my tremoring practice started to have new possibilities because I was doing this other thing. So that was sort of a personal experience. So then the professional thing I've been doing in the last couple of years anyway, is I've been thinking to myself, there's a lot of usefulness, in my case, there's a lot of usefulness in taking the, TRE's example, instead of doing just sort of the standardized six exercise warm-up sequence, that's great, it's a great process. Another way to wake up the body and the nervous system before tremoring is to use some of the subtle differentiated movements that come from Feldenkrais work. And so now what I've been doing a lot of is I'll lead sessions one-on-one, but you're more commonly with groups, where we'll take about half an hour. We won't be tremoring. We're working with the voluntary nervous system first, but in a detailed way where we're really discerning what's happening with my rib cage, what's happening with my pelvis, you know, how is my breath relating, and really building up that embodied awareness within the domain of voluntary movement first, but then transitioning into the more organic flowing neurogenic tremoring. And so that's been one area where I think I've been innovating a little bit, because what I've been believing is that we can sometimes get more out of the one by also attending to the other. And so I've gone both ways. I've sort of taught a lot of TRE people how to use Feldenkrais method effectively, but I've done the opposite. When I went through the Feldenkrais training, I introduced my peers. I said, listen, all this voluntary movement stuff is great, but what happens what about all the involuntary movement? They said, what do you mean? And I say, well, you know, don't you ever notice little twitches? And yeah, but I stop that if I can. Okay, well, what if you didn't stop that? Yeah. What would happen if you actually followed that? And so that opened up the awareness for some people in that paradigm. So that's just one example. So that's one area where I feel like I'm interested and I am doing some innovating is bridging those two modalities. But I've been curious about bridging other modalities. Like I've done quite a bit around, program you and I have discussed a little bit is around taking, I have this idea as for body, like, any body worker should at least be a little bit curious to know what the heck is this tremoring that they see sometimes. They don't necessarily need to do a year-long certification training, but they could learn something about it and they could learn to work with it because it's showing up in their body work tables anyway. So that's another area where I'm trying to kind of do a little bit of innovation is and also kind of taking tremoring out into the world. It's like going to the body workers and saying, hey, listen, like, I can teach you what's going on, and I can teach you how to work with it, and I can teach you why that's going to be such a useful thing for your practice. So that's another area that I feel like I'm kind of excited about. But the last thing I'll say is what I'm really excited about is not what I'm even more excited about this year is not really my own innovation. I'm handling my own innovation, but what I'm even more enthusiastic about right now is sort of like everybody's innovation. So I was telling you earlier a project that I just launched with a colleague based in Norway is a website. It's called Neurogenic Integration. That's the name of the website. And what it is it's going to be it's a learning portal about tremoring, but not just with TRE, because you and I are in the TRE world and we know that silo. But my inspiration here is to take the collective wisdom of people like you and providers and practitioners, and even people who are doing things like tremoring, not in the TRE world, but in another modality, because tremoring happens in other contexts. And I'm trying to, Steve, my partner and I, we're trying to create a learning hub where other people can start to share their ideas and the reason we call it neurogenic integration is because, neurogenic refers to arising from the nervous system. And when we're talking about tremoring, we talk about the neurogenic tremor reflex or neurogenic tremor mechanism. And in my view, and that's part of what we mean in neurogenic integration, but we mean more than that. Like there's other kinds, not there's other kinds of spontaneous movement that are not totally exactly the same as tremoring. And so in a way, we're trying to broaden the lens a little bit. And the reason we use that word integration is because we believe that if instead of everybody just staying in there, like I'm a TRE person, I'm a Reiki person, I'm a Feldenkrais person, if people are actually willing to start to share their curiosity around, hey, does breath work change anything? Does tremoring, what would happen if we brought tremoring into a yoga practice? What happens there? So what I'm trying to work with right now is finding other experienced people like you and around the world who have expertise, and now creating a place where we can create videos, create content, share ideas. That's really the intention. So I would say right now when I think about innovation, like, yeah, there's like the stuff I'm working on myself, but what I get even more excited about is when I think bigger than myself, I think, wow, there's so many very informed and experienced somatic practitioners that if we start to communicate across modalities a little bit more, there's going to be an enriching process. So that's what I'm most excited about.
That's amazing. I think that's a really good point or predisposition to come from. And it's not about competition, it's really about what you can learn combined. Yeah. Because, I mean, you can live to be, what, 70, 80, 90, 100 years old. If you start to learn from each other, you have 30 years, 40 years experience somewhere, someone else has it somewhere else. I think that combination is beautiful. I think for me, really, when I look at innovation and these practices, you were talking specifically about TRE, bringing it to different areas. What is Reiki, craniosacral therapy, yoga, tantra, massage, whatever it is, meditation for that instance too. I think everyone has seen those involuntary shakes or tremors or felt them themselves. Right. And the way that I usually look at it is it gives more value to the work that you do because the person has something to do between the sessions, but it's also healing from the inside. A lot of the things we do is external today. We're trying to come from the outside and do something inwards to the body. And this is really healing from the inside. So my interest is always what happens when you meet from two different hands and when you don't have a preconceived idea of what is it that's happening. So one of the common questions I ask for people, especially if it's pain or belief systems that are really lodged in, is let's create a scenario where this is the first time you're experiencing this sensation, this way of thinking, this way of being. And let's look at it as it's the first time ever. And I want you to just explain to me, what is it that's happening in your body and follow it from there. Mm. And it might be something very different because I have an unpopular statement that I say, anything that's chronic in the body is a bad habit, I should say. It's a very bad habit because most of the times it comes down to habits and subconscious beliefs. And so when you do something like TRE or these practices, you're going into a realm where thought doesn't really matter, your belief systems doesn't really necessarily, they matter, but they don't matter. It becomes, sure, we can say woo, but I think it's more mystical, and you start to touch upon that brink of awareness and consciousness, and it just opens up more perspectives, right? It's like you stand in a room, and I touch the wall. Let's say that wall just starts to move, and you're like, what's going on? And I touch the ceiling, and the ceiling starts to move. So it just expands you in many different ways, but it doesn't take anything away from you. It doesn't try to introduce a dogma. It's your experience. It's from you inside out. And for me, that's really where I come from when it comes to the innovative practices. I don't really think about it. I feel they go through me really, and they try to teach me something else. Okay, you're limiting this racehorse, you're limiting this dragon into, let's do it like this. And it wants to expand and be everywhere in a grounded way, of course. So I think that's really my way of looking at how can I innovate practices, respecting the core values and the lineages, but still there's a need. And I think respecting a lineage is also developing it. not just keeping it down. Like you like a respect for it is bring it forward, make it the best version that I can and develop it. So that's a big part of where I've come from when it comes to innovation. And then it's just fun. Because most of the times we're alone doing our things with our clients or group of people, it's just fun to meet other people and
very much so.
Get other energies and inputs. So I'm very passionate, definitely, about like working over the bridges and with different professionals to bring something new. So bring something new from existing modalities, but something that integrates very well, because I look at the need for people today and what's happening in the world, and you can't really predict what people will need in the future. Go back 10 years, could you predict that the whole world was going to stand still for a while? No one could do that. So you can't really see what the world would need. But when we do these practices, you can always stay contemporary because it comes from within. It doesn't come from an idea. And if anything, I think that's really the main message from me, you know, that's where I want the practice to come from. So when a student says, should I do this or this training? I said, the main thing I can teach is to listen to your own compass.
Totally.
And once you can listen to your own compass, then you will know what to do. And I think this is what the practices does. And then your own purpose, calling, dharma, whatever you want to call it, that's what's going to lead you
follows from there.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I read the your image of the kind of the outside in and the inside out really resonates with me. That's exactly, and I always used to describe it the same way. When I first found TRE, that's how I explained it to clients. But mostly this is what I experienced for myself, is that, you know, bodywork, it does a wonderful job of kind of coming to meet from the outside in. And what does it meet? Well, it meets the person, it meets them. Okay, well, that's wonderful. But what happens if we can enliven or accentuate the other dimension, sort of the inside out? And so that was the big aha for me with tremoring, was that if I could get people starting that and get them doing it as a independent practice a little bit, my experience was it was sort of this, I called it like an accelerator. It would just really speed up the time that any of the goals we had for body work were going to happen much more quickly, because now their nervous system was awake and curious. And so there's this inside out dimension, and now there's a much more meaningful conversation. The conversation between, you know, my hands in touch and your nervous system, there's a much bigger dynamism happening. And so I think exactly in those same terms of like, how do we make sure that there's the energy of the person? We can think of that as the nervous system, or we could think of it as their, you know, their essence or their spirit or their, or you know, any of these frameworks, but still that's a key ingredient to things. But I also want to resonate with your idea of the best creativity is it's not the conceptualization, it's what's happening in the moment. You know, that's what's so cool about the body and the physiology and the breath and the spirit, is that these things are all present moment experiences, and somatic practices in general help us. We don't have to turn off our thinking brain completely, but we can open up our awareness to all these sensations and phenomena that are truly happening in the present moment. And I totally agree with you that if we can tune into that level in whatever context we're in, that's where the most authenticity and authentic innovation and meeting of the person or meeting of the culture, it can happen from that place of presence. So I'm right there with you on that.
A global enlivening process, I think, and it's really, I think it's part of human evolution too. If I look at it from that point of view, like religion came in, science came in, and all of these belief systems. And I think this is, we're in one of those paradigm shifts where, what if I'm not externalizing all my inquiries for knowledge? What if the internal wisdom and that ability to communicate from me to you, maybe even without words, just use the nervous system regulation person to person and start to feel that? And it used to be woo-woo, like we started. It used to be like all out there, but now there's like data on the mirror neurons that my nerve bodies actually wants to regulate with you. So when we start to talk about frequency and vibe with the right frequency and all those that before maybe was more hippie terms,
right?
There's actually data and language for it and grounded, rooted, practical practices where you go, wow, I actually feel it. My body is actually moving and I am not doing it. So I think a big part of it is that too. It really brings consciousness and humans forward in a different way. And that's kind of more the feel of energy medicine or energy psychology, which is still rooted in something that's very tangible and grounded. But it's hard to dispute that this is not going on because every field is more or less agreeing, even though they have the different terms of saying it. But everyone's saying the same thing. And I think that's where the bridging and innovative processes starts to make sense. And I'm really passionate about, because I think that's really the way forward for us all.
Yeah, I completely agree. There was a few years back, David Berselli, the TRE founder, was having we were preparing for a conference that was going to include Stephen Porges, the developer of polyvagal theory, you know, big luminary in the field for really giving us the neuroscience that some of the things you're talking about, that where we can ground some of these previously, you know, people who were the hippies who were saying, oh, you know, just feel the vibes and this and that. Well, now we can, lots of things coalescing around that, you know, these are literal. Yeah. And, you know, all these things are very real, and you know, the gut brain, and, you know, we have the data that, you know, that there's, you know, a third of the number of neurons in our, you know, enteric nervous system. And so it would make sense that gut feelings would. So if we need to conceptualize things, we have much more of the science to do it. But anyway, we were preparing for this conference, and then, and I was helping David pull together kind of like questions, like, all right, what do we want Dr. Porges to speak about? And then David and I, we kind of included some questions that were more in the direction of spirituality or kind of like consciousness and this and that. And we were a little worried, or at least I was, I don't know what David was thinking, but we were a little worried that Dr. Porges would, you know, I don't know, we'd lose him or something. But the opposite happened. So he wrote, this was in an email conversation, and he wrote back and he said, yes, like this is exactly what's so interesting about this field is, you know, how does our the emerging science around neurophysiology, what does it say about you know, age-old practices of in the wisdom traditions, meditation, prayer, you know, all these kinds of things. And so he introduced us to this term called neurotheology. And neurotheology referring to, I guess, an emerging field of study where it's looking at what are the common neurophysiological principles that are in relationship to, you know, let's say, you know, experiences that might happen in meditation or mystical practices or shamanic practices, and are there any, if we learn about the nervous system, can it help give us some information around these things? And I loved that term, but more than loving the term, I love the idea that we're now in a paradigm shift where, you know, there's been sort of positives maybe and negatives about the globalization of the world. Like on the one hand, you know, there's been a big loss of traditions and cultures and languages, and so there's a bit of a that's a downside to the globalization direction of civilization, is the loss of wisdom and indigenous wisdom and embodied practices or earth-based practices. So these are real risks of losing these kinds of information. But on the positive side, if we can harness useful science, but if science can remain curious about human experience, that's, you know, in the spiritual realm or the theological realm, then actually maybe there's some really useful cross-cultural information. Because you shared earlier something so cool about tremoring, is it doesn't matter if you're a doctor or if you're a Buddhist or if you're a you know, whatever the case may be, once you're in the neurogenic tremoring process, you're into your biology, you're in your organism. Those external distinctions don't really matter at that point, or at least they are much more minimal. But this idea that if neurobiology or if neuroscience can help us bridge our understanding a bit, that speaks to human experience, not only spiritual experiences, but the experiences of being connection. What is it when we're in resonance with one another, when we're, if we can start to apply language, if we can start to learn that, well, when neurologically we have safety, now suddenly we're ourselves are in a more healthy physiological state, but we're also we're more empathetic. We can sense and feel others better on the individual level, on the family level, on the societal level. We can be less, if we're less in our stress physiology, then there's ripple effects. So I'm hopeful that the paradigm shift that you referred to is going to end up being very empowering of taking the real benefits of scientific knowledge, but then bringing it into helping to explain very human experiences that everybody has known and experienced for thousands of years. But now we can start to bridge those two worlds a little bit. So I don't know. I think that's why I stay very interested in this field, because I see it as applying to myself and the individuals, but I see it as being very relevant to the direction that civilization seems to be going.
I agree. It's a lifelong being a student and teacher at the same time. And thing, I mean, you've seen it when you teach theory in groups, whether this in person or online, the way that I teach when people actually do the tremors, the last exercise, they usually have the heads towards me so they can't get too focused on their peers, or online, they can't see anyone else either ways. But you can literally see this person starts to move in a way and this body starts to mimic. And they might be in two different countries, not knowing each other, barely speaking the same language. Right. So when you start to get these kind of examples, it's very tangible. Maybe someone might argue, okay, that doesn't prove anything. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, but it's a very clear sign that's repeatable many times. We can't exactly say we do this and that and then we'll have the same results. Right. But I remember David talking about it. I remember a lot of other people that I've worked with talking about it too in this field. So we're getting to that point where, or at least me, I'm not going to bias everyone to say it, but for me, the work is teaching me something. So I go beyond the thought, I go, well, I think, and the word is really teaching me something. It's almost like something is moving through and showing what's happening. And before there used to be woo-woo, someone used to say spirit, can be nervous system regulation, whatever you want to call it. But there is something that wants to reorganize itself and has a different intelligence, and it's very palpable. And I think that's really what makes me excited about the work and teaching it to people, because the more you connect to that, you have more agency over your own life, your mind, your health, vitality, like we mentioned in the beginning. And that really makes me passionate, because it makes people more hopeful and more empowered and realizing, wow, there's so much I can do if I just learn how to look within and to listen and follow and almost dance with this reorganizing energy that's alive within us all.
Yeah, totally. I love that. I love that. Well, what note should we close on? That's a good note. I like that note.
What note should we close on? So how do people find you? Like, people see this podcast and say, wow, that's a super interesting guy. I want to know more about what he does. How do people find you? What's a good way to start connecting with you? How does it look like?
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I mean, I think through one of my two websites. So either the redbeardsomatictherapy.com, and you know, I will put the link in the show notes or whatever we've got. You can email me, or you know, you'll find my email address on that website. And then the new one, the learning platform, is neurogenicintegration.com. That's neurogenic-integration.com. And that's the one where we are slowly growing a library of mostly video-based learning materials, but also classes and workshops and things. And to listeners, I'm already pitching Simba. I've already got ideas for Simba's contributions to this. So I'm hoping to get him in on this project, we just launched it a few weeks ago. We've been kind of getting it ready. So that website, neurogenic-integration.com, would be a great way to connect, especially if your interest is around tremoring and how it relates to other modalities. That's where I'm really centering that work. So yeah, easy to find.
Amazing. And thank you so much for joining and for having me on your podcast. It's always nice to meet you and share ideas. Yeah. And like I said, you know, before the podcast, we don't know what comes out of it, but that's the work we do as well. So it's just beautiful to meet and co-create and see what comes out of it.
Yes, I completely agree. Always wonderful to be in conversation and resonance with you, Simba.
Thank you. Likewise. Yeah.
Thank you so much for tuning in, and please send us a DM for any questions, inquiries, or consultations. Please follow us on YouTube, on Instagram, on Facebook, and on LinkedIn. And please visit our website, livingwiththespirit.com, to read more about us and what we do. And remember, freedom and purpose is your birthright. Lots of love.